So let me now take you through chapter 56 and 57 of the Isaiah scroll. 56 verse 2. Happy is the person who does this. This refers back to verse 1, of course, justice. The one who holds it fast, who keeps the Sabbath, not profaning it, and refrains from doing any evil. What's new in there is mention of the Sabbath. The Sabbath is not mentioned in all of the Isaiah scroll prior to this verse, in Isaiah ben Amos or in the exile. The suggestion is that it was when they went into exile for the first time, they had to learn to what makes us different. I suppose the Greek migration to Australia, probably the mums and dads had the same thing. They're now not in Greece anymore, eating Greek food and talking to Greek people in Greek. They've come to Sydney somewhere, or Melbourne probably, and their kids are going to a school, and it stands out what makes them different, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Any culture. So what stood out in the exile was that what makes them different from the others is their keeping of the Sabbath. That became important then, particularly important then because there's no temple. All the other things that they identified with going to the temple and were not available. So it looks like the Sabbath became important, in a sense, for the first time. I'm not saying it didn't have a history, but it comes important this one. So then after the exile, when they come back, Sabbath, alongside temple, becomes an important institution. 56 continues. Do not let the foreigner join to Yahweh, say, Yahweh will surely separate me from the people. Do not let the eunuch say, I'm just a withered tree. Why would you say that? Except that the preachers in the temple and the synagogue were probably saying it. Do you see? The other group, the majority group. The other saying, well, foreigners not allowed in. We're going to be pure race, ethnic cleansing, but perhaps a lighter tone than what we're sadly used to. And eunuchs who are punished by God, they can't have children, well, they're not allowed into the synagogue. Into the synagogue also weren't allowed. The blind, the lame, everybody else. Anyone with any obvious physical defect. Because if they had a physical defect, it was a punishment from God. Do you get me? So these people are saying they're not parting to that. Don't let foreigners say, Yahweh will surely separate me from the people. Don't let the eunuch say, I'm just a withered tree. It's clear from verse 3 that there was a strong lobby that saw the key problem in any kind of communion with those who were not ethnic Israelites. They were pushing to exclude from the people and so from the temple and probably from the synagogue and the Sabbath foreigners who adhered to the religion of Yahweh. Even ones adhering to the religion of Yahweh. Since there's no indication that Israel ever practiced castration, the eunuchs mentioned are probably also foreigners who were eunuchs. According to those wielding power in Jerusalem, eunuchs not only had no hope of children, they shouldn't be deprived of spiritual communion with the religion to which they had been adhering. They should be deprived and not allowed to come as foreigners to the synagogue. The post-exilic members of the school of the prophet preachers had inherited from their exilic teachers a more universalist view of God's will, taking you back to now, earlier, chapter 44. This one will say, I am Yahweh's. Another will be called by the name of Jacob. Yet another will write on the hand Yahweh's and adopt the name of Israel. And he's talking about foreigners. They're experiencing and they're going to come and be part of us. Look right back to Isaiah ben Amos, chapter 14. Yahweh will have compassion on Jacob, will again choose Israel, will set them in their own land, and aliens will join them and attach themselves to the house of Jacob. So both back in the 8th century, and then in the 6th century, the Isaiah school had a bigger view. And so they're continuing it against the authorities back in post-exilic Judah.
What would the numbers of the Isaiah school be?
I don't know. I have no idea. I can't know. But a minority. I can't. I have no idea. No. I don't think anyone would have an idea, really. Because they didn't have... For thus says Yahweh, this is chapter 56, verse 4. This is beautiful, really. To the eunuchs who keep my Sabbaths, that's there, they're part of this group, who choose the things that please me and hold fast my covenant, I will give, this is Yahweh, in my house and within my walls, a monument and a name better than sons and daughters. I'll give them an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. So they're castrated, so something's been cut off, but they can't have children, but not here. God is going to give them, they won't have children of their own, but they'll have a heritage of... So it's a big view, really. The members of the Isaiah school are fighting to keep alive the universalist view that they inherited, and they're fighting for justice for the oppressed. 56 verse 6 says that foreigners who join themselves to Yahweh, in the New Testament they'll be called God-fearers. Paul met some of them up in Philippi, and Acts of the Apostles mentions them a few times. Those Gentiles who never became Jews, because they didn't want to change their culture, but were very impressed with Judaism and were allowed into the synagogue as observers and that kind of thing. Foreigners who join themselves to Yahweh, and that's, they were the first group, by the way, the Christian church really met, because they had to start somewhere. They started in the synagogue, Paul did, but then the foreigners who attached themselves to Judaism saw Christianity as the way forward for them, because they could be full members without becoming Jews. So they picked it up, and then they told their friends, and then it reached from them to the Gentile community generally. But back to our text. Foreigners who join themselves to Yahweh, to minister to him, to love the name of Yahweh, to be his servants, all who keep the Sabbath, do not profane it, and hold fast my covenant, these I will bring to my holy mountain. I'll make them joyful in my house of prayer. The priests weren't letting them in, but I'll let them in. Do you get it? There's a debate going on here. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices will be accepted on my altar. For my house will be called a house of prayer for all the peoples. And you know that that text is quoted by Jesus in the temple. He's quoting this text. It's going to be for all the people. Remember, he clears the temple and says, don't make it into a house of robbers. I don't think he was worrying about charging too many shekels for the sheep. What they were robbing was actually God. They were yet to be with God, you had to be one of us, you had to belong here, which is a view that many religious had. I probably had as a kid too, thinking you had to be a Catholic, you know. We had good friends who weren't, so I don't think I took it any. Some were hard and fast, some weren't. But that's not, we're aware today, surely, that God is reaching out to the whole world. Nothing more beautiful to be, in my view, than to be a Catholic Christian. But that's a mission and a responsibility that we have to take. But everyone's embraced by God. So my house will be a house of prayer for all the peoples. Very universalist, very Jesus, very Isaiah school back in the temple period. So the focus is now on prayer, house of prayer, on communal and personal communion with God, it's not necessarily connected with sacrificial offerings. So I find anyhow in this Isaiah scroll now a deep, because religion can easily be behaviour, can't it? Cult, I was using the word earlier. In other words, what we do, what religious practice, not eating meat on Friday or whatever it might happen to be. They're all good things, there's nothing wrong with them. But that's what we, this is going into the heart and into communion with God and what it's all meant to be about anyhow. Verse 8, thus says the Lord Yahweh, who gathers the outcasts of Israel, gathers them back to the Jerusalem, yes. I will gather others to them besides those already gathered. They're going to gather the whole world into this mission. Yahweh will raise a signal for the nations and will assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. You find that in Isaiah chapter 11. Yahweh wants to gather into the people those who are outcasts in other ways. Compare this in Micah, a contemporary of Isaiah, the original Isaiah. In that day, says Yahweh, I will assemble the lame and gather those who've been driven away and those whom I have afflicted. God reaching out to all. Finally, there's no limit to Yahweh's love, for Yahweh will gather others to them. In this, as in other matters, the Isaiah school found agreement in the members of the Deuteronomic school who composed this following prayer and place it on the lips of Solomon in the first book of Kings, chapter 8. And Solomon prays, well, they didn't have a tape recording, but in the drama, the story, Solomon is portrayed as, with these are the words he has in the play, when a foreigner who's not of your people Israel comes from a distant land because of your name, for they shall hear of your great name, your mighty hand and your outstretched arm. When a foreigner comes and prays towards this house, the temple, then hear in heaven your dwelling place, hear, H-E-A-R, in heaven your dwelling place, and do according to all that the foreigner calls to you, so that all the people of the earth may know your name and fear you as do your people Israel, and so that they may know that your name has been invoked on this house that I, Solomon, have built. Clearly they've got a pretty universalist view too. Isaiah 56, 9-12 is a criticism of the leaders for their neglect. And it reads, all you wild animals in the forest, come to devour. Israel's sentinels are blind. So the people on the watchtower who should be seeing what it's all about are blind. Parish priest can't see what's going on in the community. Well, if I can't, you better help me, tell me. Israel's sentinels are blind. They're all without knowledge. They're silent dogs that can't bark. Dreaming, lying down, loving to slumber. This last year, nearly every afternoon I'd lie down for 20 minutes. Now I have my siesta. I used to do it before, but age maybe is the reason. I got used to it in Rome. So now I find about 2:30 if I'm working, I get so tired. So I lie down for 20 minutes and I'm fine again for the rest of the day. So there I am, look, dreaming, lying down and loving to slumber. The dogs have a mighty appetite. They never have enough. Please don't send an anonymous letter to your parish priest with this text in it. The shepherds have no understanding. They've all turned to their own way, to their own gain. One and all, come, they say, let's get wine. Let's fill ourselves with strong drink. And tomorrow will be like today, great beyond measure. Did you hear that crow? Sounds like a joke against the Franciscans in the kind of medieval period, doesn't it? The late medieval period, the big fat monks doing quite well. Okay, so there it is. He's not too keen on the leaders, as you can see there. And they look pretty scathing in their comments. That's Isaiah 56, chapter 9, verse 9 to 12, if you want to make a copy and send it to me or to anyone else. See Jeremiah's criticism of King Jehoiakim prior to the fall of Jerusalem in Jeremiah chapter 22. Your heart, you have eyes and heart only for your own gain. He criticized them. And Isaiah ben Amoz, chapter 3, verse 13, says, talking to the same group, it's you who've devoured the vineyard. You, the leaders, for your own benefit. And there's other texts there that you can read if you get a kick out of all this. Chapter 57, verses 1 to 2. The righteous one has perished, and no one takes it to heart. The devout are swept away, and no one gives it a thought. It was on account of evil that the righteous one was swept away. This refers back, I think, to the beautiful song we did last week of Isaiah 52:53. The lament is that people are so blind that they can't see the value of what they've rejected, so evil that they prefer to continue their sinful life rather than listen to the prophetic word, change their behaviour, and enjoy Yahweh's promised blessing. And the text continues, "He enters into peace. They repose in their final resting places. He was upright in his conduct." And I'm asking you to ponder, I don't know the answer, is the he Isaiah ben Amoz? Is the leader of the Isaiah school in exile about which that poem was written? Is it a he that stands for the community? Poetry is always a little bit difficult to be confident in interpreting correctly, isn't it? Chapter 57, 3 to 13 is a critique of idolatrous cult, even in the temple. I shan't read that. Chapter 57, 14 to 21 continues. And here we have 57 to 15 to 16 reads. "Thus says the high and lofty one who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy," a really Isaiah term for God, "I dwell in the high and holy place. I dwell with those who are contrite and humble in spirit, to receive the spirit of the lowly and to revive the heart of the contrite. For I will not continually accuse, nor will I always be angry, for then the spirits would grow faint before me, even the souls I have made." Words that spirit, lowly, it's getting close to the word humble, though it isn't using in the Greek, they don't use the word humble there, and the heart, contrite, Latin contritus, means broken, shattered. Contrition is a broken heart because of our behaviour. Chapter 57, verse 19. "Peace, peace to the far and the near, says Yahweh, I will heal them." And Ephesians 2:17 reads, "He came and proclaimed peace to you who were far off, and peace to those who were near." Clearly, he's alluding to this passage. And in the Acts chapter 2, "The promise is for you," this is Pentecost, "the promise is for you, for your children, for all who are far away, everyone whom the Lord our God calls to him." And to conclude chapter 57, "But the wicked are like the tossing sea that cannot keep still. Its waters toss up mire and mud." And then a text that you surely had quoted in your home, because I did, "There's no peace for the wicked, says my God." That's where it comes from.